right, so we are on Ayin Hey Omud Beis, 75b, working our way through Rav Nachman quoting Rabba Bar Avuha. So I am going to share the Gemara with you so that everyone will have that on their screen. Hopefully you've gotten yourself a Ksuvos, so you'll have that ready for when we start any day now, any week now. Okay, so we're dealing here with the second statement from Rav Nachman. Actually, no, sorry, it's after Rav Nachman Amar Rabba Bar Avuha. It's Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef is actually the case that we're up to. So if you're following on the shared screen, the top line on the page, Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef is what you want. If you're using your own Gemara, then you see where the lines get wide and you go up about 10 lines from there. That's what you're looking for. Everyone have it?
Yes.
I'm good? Okay. Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef, Zavan Mana de Merda Me Oved Kochavin. Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef bought a kli that was defined as made out of something called Merda. Now, if you're familiar with Latin, you know that M-E-R-D-A is dung. I believe in other languages as well, it is used as a similar term. So here, Rashi tells us that this is a mixture of clay and dung that they used to use to make utensils that they used apparently for food, which I'm going to stick with plastic probably, but that's what they did back in the day. And so the question is, do you tovel this? Do you take that to the mikvah? That's their issue. So the Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef Zavan Mana de Merda Me'ovik Kochavim, he buys such a kli off a non-Jew. Savar lahat to be lot. He wants to take it to the mikvah. Amar lehahume rabbanon. One of the rabbis said to him, Rabbi Yaakov Shmei, he was named Rabbi Yaakov. Lididi mifra shalimi neid Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan explained to me clay matchus amurin b'parsha. That the Torah only mentions metal kalim, it mentions metal utensils. This is not metal. Amar Rav Ashi, so Rav Ashi says, despite the fact that you just told me it's only metal, hani klei zechuchis, glass, ho'el v'chinishtabru yesh lahen takana, since if they break, you can repair them, kiklei matchus damu, they're compared to metal. What do you mean when you say that they are repaired if they break? What are you talking about? So I'm going to scroll up a little bit to show you Rashi. Rashi is the top of the inside column here on the page. Ho'el v'nishtabu yesh lahen takana kiklei matchus damu. He says, Ho'el v'chi mitbar chazu l'takninhu al yidei hatacha. Since if they break, you're able to repair them by melting it. You can melt the pieces of glass back together, and they will hold. Keklei matchus damu, therefore it's considered like metal, which you're also able to repair. So I did a little research on this to find out if this is really, something that anybody would do. And the answer is it works, but you don't want to do it. Meaning it's not going to make a nice fix unless you put it in a mold. If you get a real kiln, and you put the glass in a mold, then yes, that'll hold its shape. But otherwise, that doesn't really work. But that's his idea. He says the glass counts like metal because you can repair it by exposing it to heat. That's the idea here. Now, on this point, I brought you on the sheet something interesting from the Aruch HaShulchan. The sort of thing which you read and you say, really? That's what you thought? And it's one of those cases in which someone offers you an explanation of a halacha and you realize that we don't work with people's explanations. Sometimes the explanations are just wrong. And that's the case here. The Aruch HaShulchan comes up with an innovative idea to explain the connection between glass and metal. And it's here on your sheet in source Aleph. This is the Aruch HaShulchan's comment. He says, V'nira l'fiyani is daiti. It appears in my humble opinion, when we examine why the rabbis equated glass and metal, What's the, you know, for this reason? Eight, meaning the reason that the glass is heated and you can repair it via heat. Eiza svara yesh bazeh. He says, what's the logic? Okay, so you can repair glass with heat and you can repair metal with heat. So what? Halo ikara hichol. Glass is made out of sand. Why did that mean that the rabbi should say, therefore you have to tovelit? He says, just the opposite. The truth of the matter is that when it comes to tuma, we dafka reject it for this reason. It doesn't make any sense. It's not considered like metal. It's considered like dirt, the glass, which is a whole other discussion, Ashkenazim versus Sephardim. I'm not going into that. Acha inyan kein hu. He says, here's the deal. Dehine, kol mine matchus yisodam min ha'afar. He says, all kinds of metal are formed from, their fundamental basis is dirt. Ach sheba'osin ha'makomo shechofrin ben ha'matchus nizdabku chelke ha'afar zelaze bedibuk. He says that metal starts out as being dirt inside the ground, and because of the high pressure that it is under, that actually changes it in a way that is known to science. But it's really dirt at the outset. Vilachain, and therefore, kol hamone matrios srichin siruf vizikuk ba'esh. He says that's why you have to purify metals in fire. I shaposhtim tsura veloshim tsura acheres, to give them a new form. Kol min matachas tafis odosav, each kind of metal with its own character. Velokein klecheres, as opposed to pottery, lolav shum tsura acheres biyosam kalim, they do not take on a different form when they are made into utensils. Kemoshi, you sow them in offer, kain surasam offer. They remain as dirt, vein tzvichem zikuk v'tzirif ba'esh, and no purification in fire is necessary. V'inei zeh min zechuches, and glass, emes shiyasodo me offer, starts out as dirt. Aval halavash tzura acheres legamri, it then takes on a different form. Utzvichem zikuk v'tzirif ba'esh kechol minei matchios, and like metal, you heat it in fire. And that's why when it's broken, you fix it with fire. It starts out with fire. So too, when they break, you fix them via fire. So to sum up what the Aruch HaShulchan is saying here, because I just read a large chunk of it, he's bothered by the problem of why we are equating glass with metal just because you fix it via heat. So he says something which is going to make the heads of physicists, or not just physicists, but chemists, make their heads spin. He says that actually metal and glass are both formed from dirt that has been changed via heat, as opposed to pottery, which starts out as dirt and remains as dirt. And therefore, he says, we compare them for Tvilas Kalim purposes. You follow? Hello?
He was thinking alchemy.
I don't know if he's thinking alchemy or something else entirely. I don't know what I didn't look to see at what point scientists became aware of the nature of metal, the elemental character of metal. I mean, I learned about the periodic table in school 18 years ago, but I don't know what the state of the art knowledge was in his day. But this is not what the Gemara was talking about. This is one of those things that happens from time to time, where somebody is aware of, not somebody, but where a halachic authority is aware of a certain piece of scientific information and wants to borrow it in order to try to explain halacha. And sometimes that works really well, and sometimes it backfires. So in this case, it backfires, because that's not what metal is made of.
Mendeleev, who did the periodic table, died in 1907.
Right. So the Aruch HaShulchan was publishing right around that time. The Aruch HaShulchan published basically turn of that century. The question really is, though, what Mendeleev is doing with the periodic table does not reflect the discovery of elements. It's already a later stage. At what point do they become aware of the idea of elements being different, and how and why they're different? And I don't know the answer to that question.
Rabbi, if we go back to the original reason that we do the Tefillah, it's because of the story of Midyan, right?
Yes.
So should the criteria not be whatever it is that they took from Midyan that would require Tefillah, anything that didn't, doesn't require Tefillah?
So if not for the psukim that we saw, in which the Torah says, these are the things, these are the materials, right? Achas as a haves, akasef as an achoshes, as a barzel, as a bedil, as a ofares, kol asher yavo ba'esh, right? If you hadn't had a pasuk that says, you do these materials or this that enters into fire, I would have agreed with you. I would have said, look at whatever they had, and that's it. But because the Torah actually goes out of its way to enumerate materials, that tells me it isn't really about them. There is some debate, for example, regarding aluminum, because there were those who considered aluminum to be something new, even though aluminum is a metal. They considered aluminum to be something new, and therefore aluminum would not require tovaling. We don't hold that way. We hold aluminum does require tovaling. But it was for that... it was debated because it was considered something something new and different.
I think that's Yitzhak Yehuda has a similar tshuva by Plastic. He says it didn't exist, so therefore there's no tefillah needed.
Right. I don't remember if he says it didn't exist, because there's no reason to care whether it existed or not. It's not on your list in the Chumash, and it's not in the Gemara's extrapolation from that list either. There is a view that says that you tovel plastic, but we don't paskin that way. There is a view that says you tovel hard plastic. But in any case, I just thought that this Aruch HaShulchan was really interesting. So this is...
Sorry, is there a relation between what you toilo and what can be kosher?
A relation between what you toilo...
Because metal and glass have to be toiled. Well, metal for sure can be kosher. I mean, glass is a machlokas. Plastic, I mean, we're saying that it is a... whether it's totally required toppling or not. I know in North America you can catch your plastic, and so you cannot, but in Israel you can.
Right. So the plastic debate is a fascinating one, because you're right that classically post-Gim in North America were against kashering plastic. The most recent generation of post-Gim has actually started to come around towards the Israeli view that permits kashering plastic where there's a need. The best known examples are the dishwasher examples, where more post-Gim. Now, when I was in yeshiva, they said, no, you can't kosher a dishwasher if it has plastic parts. It was just simply, you can't do that. And that was what I learned. But today, the OU is willing to allow for koshering plastic. Things have changed. I'm now apparently outdated. But in terms of your initial question, we don't really connect this with what can be koshered or can't be koshered. Because what we're looking at is simply a list of items in the Chumash, and then you have the Gemara with this interesting expansion to glass, saying glass is included in metal because of its repair process, which the Aruch HaShulchan, again, wants to connect to its core identity, but is working with outdated science when he does so. But we would not, on this basis, make an equation between metal and glass. No, I don't believe so. I don't believe so. Not for koshering purposes. Okay. So that's one material, and then we're going to get a second material. So let's go back to sharing the Gemara again. We get a material known as kunya. Where was I? Yeah, there it is. Kunya. It is three lines up from where the lines get wide. Or if you're using those on your screen, it's the third line down in the Gemara. Kunya, pligi ba Rav Acha v'Ravina. Rav Acha and Ravina have a debate regarding a material called kunya. What is kunya? So Rashi says it's clay that they lined with lead. And specifically, it's an internal lining with lead. Hopefully this isn't the sort of internal lining with lead that gets people lead poisoning. But it was lined with lead. He said if you were dealing with an external one, that would be a different shiloh. But right now we're talking about an internal one, and therefore the food is exposed to the metal. But the core vessel is actually made of clay. So does it need toveling or not? That's our question. Pliki bar Rav Acha v'Ravina. So Rav Acha and Ravina had a machlokas. Chad amar kitchilaso. One said we look at it as being like its beginning, meaning it starts out as clay, and therefore no toveling is needed. V'chad amar kisofo. Then the other says, no, it's like its end, and in the end it has metal on the inside, and therefore toveling is required. V'helchasa kisofo, and the law is that it is like its end, meaning it's considered like metal, and therefore toveling is required. So those are our materials discussions. The Gemara now comes to a bigger question. And the question that the Gemara wants to debate is an issue of defining ownership. How do you define ownership of something? You say, if I take ownership of it from a non-Jew, then I have to tovel it. But how exactly do you find that? And the case they come up with to show why it's difficult to define ownership is the case of a non-Jew's item which you are now holding as collateral. In other words, you lent him money, he gave you his big, I don't know, gold serving dish to hold as collateral. You want to use it. You're allowed to. You're not breaking the terms of the collateral or anything. So the question is, do you need to tovel it? If you'll tell me it's not mine, then the answer is no. No toveling is required. It's his. I'm just borrowing it from him. We already said you don't need to tovel borrowed stuff. However, maybe we consider it to be yours. Why would we consider this to be yours?
Because you have the right to use it.
Yeah, you have the right to use it. Sorry, Clive, you were going to say? You were muted.
If he defaults on the loan, you keep the
debt. Even stronger. So Rabbi Grossman said you have the rights to use it. But Clive points out, not only that, if he defaults on the loan, it's going to be yours. And not only will it be yours, but it'll be yours retroactive to when you first got it. It turns out it was really yours. Actually, that's not necessarily true. I shouldn't say that. We'll see where things go in the Gemara. Not necessarily. But that's the concern here. Ilan, you were going to say?
No, I was going to make the same point.
Okay.
But in that case, you would have to, like if he did default, even if you didn't have to travel it initially, and then he did default, then you'd have to travel it. It became yours.
So, well, that's part of our question. We're going to get to that. But this comes up not only regarding toveling. It comes up in other areas of halacha. Yes, Chuck? You're muted.
I am muted now.
Yes, you are. You are showing great adeptness at unmuting yourself.
Thank you.
There are so many jokes I can make.
I have to explain my muteness. Does halacha distinguish between levels of ownership?
Meaning?
Meaning in secular law, common law, we distinguish that there's an equitable level of ownership. If I take property security for a loan, I don't own it in secular law. I have a right to it. If I make an agreement of purchase and sale, I don't own it yet, but I have an equitable right to it.
Right.
I'm wondering if halacha makes those distinctions and if that makes any difference for our discussion.
So that's exactly what we're asking here. That's our question, and yes, it comes up in a variety of areas of halacha. Think about it on Pesach, right? We have a big discussion in Psachim about shaloh and birshuso. Chametz that is yours, not necessarily in your domain, or chametz that is in your domain, but is not necessarily yours. And one of the questions that comes up is actually a parallel question to our discussion. What about chametz that you're holding as collateral? You lent somebody who wasn't Jewish money, he gave you chametz as collateral, and Pesach comes along. What is your obligation regarding that? It comes up with Kiddushin also. Right? Kiddushin may be the most famous example. somebody gives you a gold ring, or doesn't have to be gold, but somebody gives you a ring as collateral, you use it to betroth a woman for kiddushin, and the question now is, what's her status? Is she married to you or not? So these questions come up, and fundamentally, Chuck, that's really what they're asking. What is the status of an ownership which isn't really an ownership, but rather it is possession of rights? You have certain rights over the item. He could easily kick you out. Meaning if he comes back and he drops money in your lap, then the item is his. And there's nothing you can do to prevent that. That would seem to indicate it's not yours. You may have rights, but the rights are extremely limited. On the other hand, as we said before, if he defaults, then the thing is yours. So that's the question that the Gemara wants to address here.
It's also a question of ownership at the time. Like when you get someone, let's say an Ezra, and you transfer the Ezra, okay, now it is yours. And then it is his, in his possession, and for that moment it is his, and then gives it back, and it transfers back to you. So in terms of who's in ownership of the time, even if it's a temporary ownership.
Right. So you are correct, and you're raising, effectively, another question which the Gemara deals with, called a matana amanas lahachzir, a gift that is conditional upon its return. And is that a valid gift at all? And that's the most common case, is the Lulav and Esro case. Because we say, Lokachtem lachem, you take for yourself the Arba Minim, the Lulav, the Esro, Kadasim, and Aravos, therefore you actually are supposed to be the owner. So in the event that you give it with intention that he give it back to you, is that really a valid gift? There's another variety, the variation on that, in the Gemara Nedarim. They talk about what's called Matnas Beis Choron, in which you give somebody property, saying, I want it to be used for a particular purpose and only for that purpose. The case comes up there. There's a father and a son who had some kind of a falling out, and one of them swore that the other one should not benefit. The end of the story is that the father is not allowed to benefit from the son. The son is getting married. He wants his father to be able to come to the wedding. So he says to somebody, here is the wedding meal and everything else, and I want you to have it, because he wants him to invite the father to the wedding. However, the guy turns around and says, I'm dedicating the whole thing to the Beis HaMikdash. I'm not interested in being your means of sinning. This way you get to celebrate with your father, and I get to burn in Gehenna for it. So he says, I'm not interested. So Rav Asher Weiss has a discussion in a tshuva where he distinguishes between matana amanas lahachzir, a gift, on condition that it be returned, and the Matnas Beis Choron case, in which it is actually a gift meant to be used in only one way. And he says, where it's a gift, you can use it however you like, just make sure that you give it back to me, then it's really owned by the recipient of the gift. Because it is fundamentally his, it's just that there's one thing he has to do with it eventually. Whereas where it's a gift of, I'm giving this to you, but I only want you to use it this way, to invite my father to the wedding, then it's not truly a gift. But to go back to our discussion here, what we've established is that there are variations on this in terms of ownership of rights without ownership of the item, and frankly, there are more cases that we could bring. I'm getting a message, my internet connection is unstable. Hopefully, everyone can still hear me. We're good? Okay. So the question is, what is the status here? So I'm going to go back to share the Gemara with you, and we'll see what the Gemara does with this. So it should show up on your screen, assuming my internet connection does not give out. Ibayaluhu, it's the end of the thin lines. Ibayaluhu, question is asked. Mashkanta mai, what's the status of a collateral? Omar Mar Bar Rav Ashi. So Mar Bar Rav Ashi said, Abba Mishke Nalei Ove Kochavim Kasa de Kaspa. He says, my father, Rav Ashi, had a silver cup that a non-Jew gave to him as collateral. Ve'at b'lei v'ishtivei. And he tovled it, and he drank with it. So that sounds like you do need to tovel it. But then he says, v'lo yedana, I don't know. Imishum de kasavar mashkanta kizvini damya. Is it because he held that a collateral is like a purchase? Saying, it's now mine, and therefore I have to tovel it. Was that what he was doing? Or was it unique to this case? Because he saw that the non-Jew intended to default on the debt. Since he saw the non-Jew intended to default on the debt, therefore he said, I need to tovel this. In other words, if I take the first approach, you could extrapolate from this case to all collaterals. And just like in this case, he needed to tovel it, in all collateral cases you need to tovel it. But the second approach is no. This case was unique, because he saw the guy was going to default. But collaterals in general would not require toveling. That's what's unclear here. Chuck asks in the chat, is it possible that Rav Ashi toveled it to kosher it? And the answer is no. Toveling is never koshering. Toveling is never an act of koshering. We're going to talk more about that in the Gemara, in the next piece of Gemara, but toveling is never koshering. So that wouldn't have been what he was doing. So the Gemara stops here. The Gemara brings me, here's what Rav Ashi did. Here are two possible explanations, and now let's go on to a separate conversation. The Gemara is done. It seems to think it's the Yerushalmi. For those of you who have learned Yerushalmi, you've seen this before. That's what Yerushalmi does. It brings up a topic, it says, oh, here's a view, okay, fine, let's move on. The Bavli tends to be more verbose, tends to have more to say, but not here. So the Psak on this, as a result, is very confused. We have multiple views. So I'm going to first of all share with you the Gemara again to show you what Tosfos says. Tosfos imishum de kasavar mashkanta kizvini. And the Tosfos up here, he says, v'kevan delo ivshita, since it's not resolved in the Gemara, matbilin the mashkanta below bracha. We tovel it without a bracha. That's what you will do in practice, is you take it to mikvah, and you just don't make a bracha, because we don't know. We don't know what the conclusion is. And then he says, v'im yesh lo kli shekanam in ha'ovik ha'chavam ha'mechuyav tevila, if you have something else that you bought off a non-Jew that you know needs toveling, yadvil ze'imo, so dip the two together, v'yivarech ha'shneim, and make the bracha on both. That's his solution for the problem. But Tosfos believes that you do need to tovel it because we don't know what to do. However, if you take a look, I'm going to now share the source sheet with you. The Rambam actually says no toveling is needed. No toveling required. Why? The Gemara left things vague. Why do you not need to tovel it? So here I show you the Rashba in source base. And the Rashba brings our question. This is from the Rashba's work, Taras Habayis. Ibayalu, mashkanta mai. What's the rule in the case of a collateral? Dot, dot, dot. Ule inyan psak halachi. It says, as far as law, harambam zalkasav de'eno tzarech tevila. The Rambam says no toveling is needed. Utmili. He says, I'm shocked. Da mashma de tevila zumi del reisehi. We thought that toveling is a biblical mitzvah. We learn it from the vessels of Midian in the Torah. And even if they're brand new, it has nothing to do with kashrus. He says, this is down on a biblical matter, and therefore, you should go strictly. Yeah, but the Rambam believes it's rabbinic. Ukroi, and these psukim asmachta bi'almain are just an asmachta. They're connected to the idea of it, but it's fundamentally a derabbanan. Remember, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I tortured you with this discussion of is toveling biblical or rabbinic? Now the discussion pays off. The Rashba says the Rambam thinks it's rabbinic, and that's why the Rambam says toveling is not required. The Ran says that as well. In practice, the Shulchan Aruch follows the view of Tosfos. It's actually source Dalet. I'm jumping source Gimel right now. We're going to come back to source Gimel. But source Dalet says, Mishkein Obek Ochavim Kli Yisrael, if a non-Jew gives the Jew a Kli to hold his collateral, Im Nira Bidasa Obek Ochavim Sheratza L'Shak Obi Ado, if the Jew can see that the non-Jew intends to default, Taun Tevila, then dip it. Vim Lav, and if not, Yat Bilenu Bela Bracha, do it without a Bracha. O Yikne Kli Acher V'Yat Bilenu Imo, or get another Kli, and then you'll tovel it with it. But now I have a problem. And this is the problem that I think of as the Zach's problem. That's the way I'm always going to think of this. Here's my question to you. If you take the second view, the second perspective, right? We had two different views as to why Rav Ashi is toveling this. The first view was he's toveling it because he considers it yours. Right? Your partial rights to it are significant enough that it's considered yours. Fine. But in the second view, it's not yours right now. However, he could tell the non-Jew plans to default on the debt. If that's your case, then as of right now, is it yours or isn't it yours? As of this moment, Alan shakes his head, no, it's not yours right now. Right? You don't own it right now at all. So what good does your toveling do? Your hulachumra toveling. If he does default on the debt eventually, that toveling shouldn't count. It wasn't yours yet. This is what I think of as my Zach's problem. The first time when I was in Toronto, when I first came to Toronto, that somebody gave us a candy, a bowl of candy from Zach's in a glass candy bowl. And I didn't know what to do. Do they tovel it? Do they not tovel it? So I called up Rabbi Eber with the COR, and I asked him, is this toveled? And he said, of course not. And I said, what do you mean, of course not? And he pointed out what he's 100% right about, which is, Zach's bought the glass bowl off of some non-Jewish manufacturer, right? They didn't buy it off of the manufacturer for the sake of eating from it. They bought it as merchandise, which they are now going to turn around and sell to somebody else. Therefore, even if they did tovel it, it wouldn't do any good. It's not clay seuda for them. It's not a vessel used for a meal. So they can't tovel it. It doesn't do you any good. Just the opposite. It'll mislead the public. If there's a little note on it saying, we toveled it, people will think it's fine. It's not fine. You have to tovel it still. So that's why I think of this as my Zach's problem here. The same thing is true in our conversation here. What good does it do to tovel it before the guy defaulted? You follow the problem. So in fact, take a look. Yeah.
I was just going to say, why don't you see maybe, the concept of Kuvra Devar Lamafriya, that it was yours or it wasn't yours.
Right, so that was one thought that I had. Maybe you could make the argument, sorry, I shared the wrong thing. Maybe you could make the argument that retroactively it turns out that it was yours all along since he defaulted. But I don't think that that works. It's not really yours until he defaults, no matter what his intent was. Or, at the least, it's suffix, it's doubt. It's not certainly yours. So then I saw what I saw in the Shulchan Aruch. Take a look at Source Gimel. Source Gimel is where it gives you the halacha regarding utensils that are bought as merchandise. And it's the part that I bolded in Source Gimel. V'yesh misha omer, some say, shim lo lekacho harishon letzarech seuda, in a case where a Jew bought it off a non-Jew, but not for the sake of use for a meal. Let's say it's a knife, and he wanted to use it to cut wood chips. Ain't it tzarech lahad to be low? So some say that there's no need for a Jew who now buys it. I'm sorry, there's no need for him to immerse it. He can't use it for a meal, but there's no need to immerse it. But then the Ramah writes, the second part that I bolded in Source Gimel, V'cheinim kino Yisrael Hasheni min Arishon l'tzarech se'uda tzarech tevila gabei Hasheni. If I buy it off of the guy who isn't using it for a meal, I have to immerse it. That's the Zach's case. Now look at Dalet, the Ramah here. Dalid was the case of collateral. So we said already, we read the Shulchan Aruch, and he said that the that you have to immerse it if it looks like he's going to be leaving it with you. If not, dip it without a bracha. The Ramah writes, "V'im lebesov nishtaka biyado." If in the end he leaves it with you, yachzor v'yapilenu below bracha. You have to dip it again without a bracha. So, in other words, in the case in which you are holding this item as as collateral, and you want to use it, you're going to dip it once right now because of your doubt. And then if he defaults and leaves it with you, you're going to dip it a second time without a bracha. This is going to require two immersions. That's the upshot. Are we clear on that?
First time you do it, you don't make a bracha.
No bracha either time.
But either time.
Correct. No bracha either time. Correct. Okay. Good. We still have 2 minutes or so, so I'm just going to take us into the beginning of the next brisa here. We are going to get close to finishing the Amud, but we will not actually finish it today. Tana Rabbanan, it's the third wide line. Brisa says, this is the protocol when you buy kelim off of someone who is not Jewish. And yes, Chuck, it says Ovdei Kochavim, but it means non-Jews in general, not only star worshippers. So, Halokeach Klei Tashmish Min Ovdei Kochavim. Steinsaltz is very nice, but he's not on my screen. The Halokeach Klei Tashmish Min Ovdei Kochavim. If someone purchases Klei Tashmish, vessels that you use, from a non-Jew, Dvarim Shalonishtamish Bahen Matvilon Vehein Tehorin. That which has never been used, so dip it in the mikvah, and it's tahor, meaning it's usable. Dvarim shenishtamish ben alidei tzonein, if it's been used with cold, kigon, he gives you examples, kosos, ketonios, tzlochios, cups and pitchers of various kinds, it's only used with cold, madichon, so rinse them. Umatbilon, dip them in the mikvah, vein tahorin, and then they're usable. Dvarim shenishtamish ben alidei chamin, if they have been used for hot water, kigon, or hot liquids, I should say. Kigon, for example, hayoros, hakumkumusin, vats and kettles, mechame chamin, urns, things that you use to heat up water. Magilon, you do hag'ala first, boil it up. Umat bilon, and then take it to mikvah, vein tahorin, and then they're fine. Devarim shenishtamish ben al yedei ha'ur, that which is used with fire. Kigon, hashfudin ba'iskilos, various kinds of spits. Milabanon, you whiten them in a fire, umat bilon, and then you take them to make with a hint of harin, and then they're fine. The chulan, okay, that's the table that I gave you on your sheet. If you were to look at the sheet, I gave you a breakdown between, first of all, the initial status. You see, items that were unused, used with cold, used with hot, used with fire. Get examples of it in the brisa, and then here's the recommendation for what you do. And then they ask, what happens if you used it before you toweled it or koshered it? V'chulon shenishtamish b'hen ad shelo yatpil v'shelo yagil. For all of them, if you use it before immersing, if you use it before you do hagala, v'shelo yelabin, or before you do libun, tanichada asur, v'tanya idach mutar. Two different views. One says your food is kosher, one says your food is treif. And this is debate about tam lifgam, which we've talked about before. What happens if there is non-kosher absorption of food in something, but it doesn't taste good? It has a flawed taste, a defective taste. In such a case, will it render the food you cook next treif or not? And those are the two views that you're seeing here. So, God willing, what we'll do is next time we'll pick up with this machlokes, this debate about tam lifgam, and go further with that. And that will also lead to a discussion briefly of what happens if kalim were used to cook food and they weren't taken to mikvah, what's the status of the food that was made in them? So, God willing, we'll pick up with that, I hope, next Sunday. Okay? All right. Thank you very much. And laser, happy birthday.